Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Mark Magnuson.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. In today's episode, I am joined by Adam Keel of the Iowa Soybean Association. Dustin Huffman speaks with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg, and Russ Parker provides his faith-based segment. Let's turn our attention now to this week's news headlines. Our first segment of Weekend Ag Matters is brought to you by BEX. Since 1937, BEX has stood up for the things that matter most: faith, independence, and helping farmers succeed. To celebrate Earth Day, the Iowa Food Bank Association reminded everyone that 27.1 million pounds of food was rescued in 2023 by the six Feeding America food banks serving Iowa. As one of those members, Food Bank of Iowa and its partners contributed 7.1 million pounds to the number. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, up to 40% of the United States food supply is wasted every year. Food banks rely on retail rescue to meet the growing and record need for food assistance. In fact, preventing wholesome food from going to the landfill is the very reason food banking began. By working with grocery and convenience stores, manufacturers, growers, and restaurants, IFBA food banks are able to supplement their inventories, keep pantry shelves stocked, and bring food waste down to as low as 3%. Food banks adhere to strict food handling, temperature, and storage guidelines to ensure the food that they distribute is safe. The food they rescue may be mislabeled, close-dated, or needs to be repackaged in some way. Fresh produce may not be the perfect size or shape, or a donor may simply have a surplus. Food banks make sure that good food that might otherwise be discarded instead goes to neighbors facing hunger. Also this week, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg announced that the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship will invest in 14 urban water quality projects within communities of all sizes across the state. Secretary Nagg made the announcement with city leaders from Davenport at an event at Goose Creek Park, the location of one of the new water quality projects. Utilizing funding from the state's Water Quality Initiative and other sources, the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship will provide cost-share grants that cover up to 50% of the total cost of each project. The department is investing nearly $3.6 million, which will leverage an overall investment of approximately $10 million across the 14 projects. And the University of Illinois Farm Policy News says that Iowa farmers told officials that they should block the sale of the Iowa Fertilizer Company to Koch Industries. The sale is worth $3.6 billion. Farmers attending the Iowa Farmers Union's listening session told Lena Kahn, the Federal Trade Commission chair, that consolidation is already squeezing their slim profit margins. The plant located in southeast Iowa received approximately $45 million in local, state, and federal economic development incentives and tax benefits over a decade ago to encourage the plant's construction. Farmers point out that the acquisition would be the latest in a series of mergers and consolidations that have limited the number of companies that they can purchase farm supplies and equipment from and sell livestock and crops. Four companies account for 75% of the nation's supply of nitrogen. Kahn didn't say whether the FTC is investigating the Iowa Fertilizer Company sale. You can find our daily news stories, five of them, every day on our website at iowaagnet.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter that delivers those five daily stories to your inbox each day. You can also find our daily market podcast under the podcast tab. That's all the time we have this week for news headlines. Let's turn it over now to Russ Parker for his faith-based segment here on Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
I had to laugh the other day when I heard the song, "I Can See Clearly Now, The Rain Is Gone." I've got an appointment with the eye doctor in a couple of weeks to get a cataract removed, and I guess in between now and then it's going to be raining. Eyesight is one of the gifts that's so easy to take for granted. I was watching the Hallmark series One Calls a Heart the other night with my wife, and the teacher was describing the rotation of the planets with a model to her students, and one of them was blind. And I thought about the extra brain power she needed to use to imagine in her mind how the planets moved in whatever the sky looked like through her own mind's eye. Which brings me to another topic that's connected to this concept of the mind's eye. When we dream, it seems we see clearly. At least for me, it's true. Even when our eyes are closed in sleep, our brains can see images as clear as if our eyes were open. Sometimes these dreams are even called visions. For example, the famous quotation from Dr. Martin Luther King's, "I have a dream," and he goes on to explain what he quote unquote saw, a vision of slaves and slave owners sitting down at the table of brotherhood. It's an interesting connection of dots, isn't it, that moves what we see in the present to what we vision about for what things look like in the future. From a simple perspective, I always get a kick out of those times when an artist's rendition compares the photos of what we look like now, then at middle age, and finally at old age. And I remember one of my high school friends, when she saw this transition years ago, say, "I'm all in." She liked the gracefulness of her aging process, at least in the mind's eye of the artist. And I think it's natural for all of us to want to see into the future. Wouldn't it be something if we knew what was coming before what was coming got here? Lots of mistakes would not be made, but making mistakes is part of God's plan, part of His vision, creating a way to reach back to Him. Allow me to go back to Dr. King's dream when his vision starts to form and create a faith statement. He said, "I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, every hill and mountain shall be made low, and the rough plains will be made smooth, and the curved places made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together." What is your vision for your life? What do our eyes see together as we move forward in our faith journeys? Peter says in the book of Acts during his sermon at Pentecost, "And in the last days it shall be, God declares, that I will pour out my Spirit on all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy, and your young men will see visions, and your old men will see dreams, and I will show wonders in the heavens above." Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. Up next, I will be joined by Adam Keel of the Iowa Soybean Association for segment number two of Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods this month in April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here is Mark Magnuson.
Mark Magnuson for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, and I'm joined today by Adam Keel. We are at the Iowa Soybean Association, and we're here today to talk with Adam. Adam, could you tell us, please, your role within the Iowa Soybean Association?
Yeah, I'm the Managing Director of the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund here at the association.
So let's start with the basics. Soil and Water Outcomes Fund, could you tell us about it and what exactly you do within that program?
Yeah, sounds good. So the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund helps farmers implement regenerative ag practices or conservation practices on their farms and provides a financial benefit for them doing so. We derive the financial benefit from companies that partner with us that want to support farmers. So companies like Cargill and PepsiCo, Target, Walmart, and others are all supporting us in turn to support farmers' efforts.
So when we're talking about those regenerative practices, which practices are we thinking? Are we thinking some of the more common ones, some of the more intense practices, I guess? Where are we looking at there?
Yeah, so we really put that decision up to the farmer with our program. So if farmer wants to do cover crops, that's great. If they want to reduce tillage, that's fantastic. Some farmers are doing those practices in combination. Others are doing other things entirely. We're really focused on those in-field practices that work with the cropping systems that we have in Iowa and across the Midwest where we work.
So why is the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund, why is it important to Iowa farmers specifically?
Well, one thing that we're hearing from companies that utilize crops that farmers are producing is companies want and their consumers want crops that are grown more sustainably. So we're here to help farmers produce those crops in a way that's going to keep them in the market for the crops that they're producing and selling. So it's a way for us to kind of get farmers to the point where they can stay in these markets and continue to supply products that are used by companies. And today, companies are willing to financially support farmers, which is great. So we're here to help farmers along that journey because, you know, folks like PepsiCo and others don't have the resources with the humans to get out on farms and talk to farmers about these things.
So then you're kind of the go-between. You help facilitate that and then help out with the financial incentive on that end as well. So the farmer says, well, I don't want to put in, you know, too much of my own money into this. What can I do to help out on that end? And that's where you come in.
Exactly. And we've got a team of experts who are out helping farmers enroll in the program. They're also helping provide advice on how to implement these practices and still be successful with producing a crop while meeting the expectations that we have in terms of getting cover crops in the ground or implementing no-till, for example.
So Adam, is it as simple as that then? A farmer maybe that's a little bit hesitant, doesn't know if they want to implement these regenerative practices, all of a sudden they have that financial incentive and maybe a little bit of an extra income stream. Do they say, hey, this does sound like a good idea for me? Do you find that quite often?
We do, yeah. And more times than not, we come across farmers who have experimented with these things on a small scale. Maybe they've tried something on a field or two within their operation. We're a great resource to help those farmers scale up to maybe their whole operation. So that's a way that we can grow with farmers as they feel comfortable with practices. But really, it's either getting in and trying it on a few acres, or for those farmers that are comfortable scaling, it's really taking this to the next level, and we're there to help them with that.
So what is the direct role? What is the direct link between the Iowa Soybean Association and the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund?
Yeah, so the Iowa Soybean Association owns the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund. So we operate that on behalf of the farmer board of the Iowa Soybean Association. And we get a lot of direction from farmers, so that's the direct connection. It's also important to note that, you know, we work across many states as well, and we try to interact with commodity groups in other states to get feedback on what works in Illinois or Indiana or Ohio, for example.
So for farmers, does this apply to all farmers in the state of Iowa? Does it apply to just a certain subset? Who should be thinking about this more specifically for their operation?
Yeah, right now, all of Iowa is eligible to enroll in terms of the geography. So every county is eligible in the state. Farmers would need to be growing corn or soybeans to participate. So that's a criteria that we have. But other than that, it's really looking at farmers who are looking to expand or implement these new practices.
So Adam, from your role specifically, are you more on the side of helping to coordinate everything, or are you going to farmers and saying, hey, this is something that we offer, maybe you should think about getting involved?
Yeah, so we do outreach like this, you know, marketing and promoting the opportunity, but really when it comes down to it, we want farmers to reach out to us when they're interested. So we've got an enrollment site. It's our website, theoutcomesfund.com. Farmers go to that site, they sign up. We'll have someone call them or do some outreach with them in about 24 hours so that we can answer questions and help them through the process.
What has the growth looked like for this program since it's been implemented?
Yeah, so we started in 2019, and the acres that year were around 9,500 acres in Iowa. This year, our target goal is around 750,000 acres in the Midwest. So we've seen significant growth in Iowa. We're probably over 200,000 acres in Iowa last year. So significant growth, but we want to continue to grow that as well to meet the demand that we have.
So there is still room to grow this, and you're going to continue to see that year over year, hopefully?
Yes, for sure. We've seen growth in that demand of acres and outcomes over the years, and don't see that changing anytime soon.
So Adam, then the next question, how would a farmer get involved if they hear this, they see this interview and they say, I think I kind of fit in this category and I would like to get involved with the program?
Yeah, the first thing I'd recommend is going to our website, theoutcomesfund.com. You can learn more about the program there, connect with us. If you want to take that next step on that website, create an account. I think it's called Sign In. Go there, create an account, and we'll follow up with you, answer any questions, and hopefully get farmers enrolled.
Adam, is there anything else you'd like to let our viewers know about when it comes to the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund and what you've been working on?
Yeah, we're just here to support farmers. We think we're a good opportunity to add value to the farm. So we want to make sure that we're doing that in a farmer-friendly way. And I think that's why the Iowa Soybean Association has supported us over the years, is we're doing this in a way that's farmer-friendly and farmer-first. And again, it's a great way to add value to farms today.
And I guess one more question I wanted to ask you, Adam, what is kind of the review that you get from a farmer that goes through this process and says, hey, this was pretty slick and it worked out well for my operation? What are they saying to you at the end of that result?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest testimonial to that is two things. One, we've got over a 92% re-enrollment rate year over year, which is fantastic for us. We also see farmers in the program growing their acres year over year. So they're re-enrolling and they're including more acres every year. So I see that as a good sign that we're doing something right.
Certainly does sound that way. Adam, thank you so much. Adam Keel, Soil and Water Outcomes Fund. We are here at the Iowa Soybean Association. Adam, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Adam Keel with the Iowa Soybean Association as that wraps up segment number two of Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Coming up in segment number three, Dustin Huffman will be joined by Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg here on Weekend Ag Matters.
April is full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, farmers can be proud of the work they do to produce the foods that people eat all over the world. So if you take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you thank the American farmers who produce the food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable. This message from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Huffman.
Well, we're talking once again with Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg. And Secretary, first of all, thanks so much for taking the time out of a busy schedule, I know, with spring planting and everything, to take a chance and visit with us here today.
Well, I'm always happy to catch up.
All right, so before we get into planting and all that, we got a big announcement Friday. We know about the battle we've been waging for, 2 years now about trying to get E15 year-round in 8 Midwestern states. Governor Reynolds was very instrumental in getting that done. But then EPA finally got around to it, then said, hey, let's wait till 2025 to start. And that irked us all even a little more. And so now there were some chances of legislation going on to get it done. But EPA kind of just relented finally on Friday. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we did finally have that emergency waiver that was granted to allow E15 usage during the summer fueling season. Again, this is comes with a it's good news, bad news, right? We needed it, we wanted it. Many of us have been asking for it, but it also just underscores how we continue to seek that national solution. We don't have that national year-round access to E15 solution that we want. It's a little frustrating. So look, this is a team effort on the part of Iowa elected officials and industry leaders, Governor Reynolds, Attorney General Byrd, myself, the whole delegation pushing hard to try to get to a solution here. And the work just continues. But, maybe the thing that frustrates me most is that we see the benefit here. Iowans set a record for E15 usage last year. In fact, it was up 50%. And the number that, I think should be important to all of us is that saved Iowans nearly $38 million in terms of the cost at the pump, meaning E15 was cheaper than the alternatives that they would see. Now, we look at that and say, my goodness, why wouldn't we want everybody to have access to that kind of fuel and that kind of savings? Oh, and by the way, beyond, we're talking E15, and many of us would love to see pushing beyond to things like E30. But meanwhile, we're still trying to achieve this nationwide solution. But, for the time being, we'll take that emergency waiver. It's certainly needed. It was certainly justified. And we'll continue to work for that national solution.
And it's kind of frustrating. We had a national solution back in, was it 2019? We got it year-round. Of course, the courts in D.C. blocked it. We know why they blocked it. So really, it shouldn't be that hard for EPA to just go and say, hey, let's fix that hole that we saw that the court was able to shoot down, and let's get it fixed and put it right back out there. And, I asked Secretary Vilsack earlier this year, too, why do we keep putting a Band-Aid on something that clearly needs to be stitched?
Well, where there's a will, there's a way. That's what I would say. I mean, there's many ways to achieve this, and we just flat out don't have an administration that wants to do that. And they'll talk a good game. They'll say they're supportive, but really, let's put our money where our mouth is. Let's see that national year-round solution that, again, we know would benefit. It's good for certainly farmers from a market standpoint. It's good for an industry from a economic development and job standpoint, it's you know, good for consumers. But look at the world today. We've got a very uneasy world, you know, and think about that, what that means in terms of energy, energy availability, and the importance of energy independence. That's a national security issue. And I think every now and then we have to be reminded of that, that this is not just about a great marketplace, but it's also about our nation's security. And we ought to be thinking about all of those components when it comes to this policy. Let's get it right, for goodness sake.
And now let's switch from federal policy, but let's go to the state house. We just saw the legislative session end. We got some wins in agriculture. Let's talk a little bit about those and kind of recap what we got and how things look.
Yeah, good session again for agriculture. We've got great support in both chambers, and so, you know, as they wrap up the legislative calendar, of course the budget takes full focus, and again we had a strong support for continuing some really important priority issues. You know, certainly a water quality and soil conservation being chief among those. Continuing to support our work around foreign animal disease response and preparedness, and saw an increase there. And again, this is about trying to make sure that we can have the capability to respond, but also the capacity to prepare and exercise and have some equipment that we need. And again, there's been a lot of support for that. Of course, just with recent news, it only drove home the importance of having that kind of capability. And the market development, and here again, and continued strong support. In fact, an increase for the Renewable Fuel Infrastructure Program, which is cost share for fuel marketers to put in the hardware that they need to carry those higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel. And also some efforts to strengthen our Choose Iowa program, which is relatively new, but got a ton of support, a lot of excitement around it. So we'll be able to continue the meat processing, the dairy processing, and the Choose Iowa grants that we've been doing, in addition to just building out that program. So really excited about those continuations. And then some policy pieces that were really important, like strengthening our prohibition on foreign ownership of farm ground. That was one of the key wins for agriculture throughout the session.
All right. And you mentioned dairy. I know we talked earlier this last week about the Choose Iowa grant, so we covered that. But there was some other great information. Of course, first thing foremost is HPAI. We talk about it with much concern, rather, about birds, especially with migration and now nesting going on. But yeah, Now the dairy cattle are susceptible. And we haven't had any cases in Iowa, but they're kind of scattered around the plains and the Corn Belt. I mean, let's talk about the things that are being done to make sure that we're keeping our animals safe here in Iowa.
You know, the one thing that I've been able to say all along is that this is an evolving situation, and that continues to be true today. And I think it's really important just to, you got to stick to the facts, stick to what you know. And this is certainly a unique situation. It's not unique. It's not entirely new that poultry, mammals can contract high path avian influenza. That's happened in the past. But what you've got here is that same virus that's been circulating in the wild bird population the last 3 years found its way into dairy cattle operations, and then has proceeded to spread throughout the country to various states. And it may also be independent wild bird introductions in some of those other places as well. Again, those are questions that will still need to be answered. But the fact is that it's something that has moved with some cattle. I think we've seen that, and that is concerning. And of course, then there's some questions around, well, if it's in a dairy herd, could it reinfect poultry next door, or what's the impact on the swine herd? So again, we need to follow the facts, let the science be developed here to tell us, what the answers to those questions are. But I want to continue to stress that this is certainly an animal health issue, but it is not a human health issue, and it is not a food safety issue. If ever there was an industry that understood food safety and the importance of diverting milk from sick cattle, it would be the dairy industry. And so that's something that they've done well for many years, well-established procedures. And so folks can rest assured that if they're drinking pasteurized milk or consuming pasteurized dairy products, that they're safe from this and all kinds of other foodborne pathogens and illnesses that they could contract. So this is really important for folks to understand that, but just know that we're working with colleagues in other states, with the industry, with USDA, to continue to develop this situation and learn as we go and make adjustments along the way.
And then we also got some news dairy-wise, coming from Boone. You want to tell us what's going on with Daisy?
great news. Great news for the Boone community and for the state of Iowa, really. And that's that there were some approvals both in the Boone community, but also with the Iowa Economic Development Authority board on Friday, approving assistance for Daisy to come into the Boone area. Significant investment, a huge plant, and very, very excited about this. So immediately, of course, that has an impact on giving our dairy farms one more very large marketplace to market their milk. But I think we could also trigger perhaps an expansion of some dairy as well. And we know that that's really, really good for the communities where those dairies are centered. So a really good company, a great corporate citizen. We're excited to have them coming to the state of Iowa. And it's great news for the community, but also for that dairy industry that, frankly, needs a little bit of good news.
All right. Any last minute messages for those Iowa farmers that are watching today?
Well, certainly stay safe out there, and to those traveling on the roads, keep an eye on those farmers, big equipment. They can't always see you. And let's make sure we get through safe and sound.
That was Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Nagg here on Weekend Ag Matters. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You can find all our content online at iowaagnet.com. For Russ Parker, Riley Smith, and Mark Magnuson, we thank you for listening. This has been Weekend Ag Matters.